It's in memory today.
Rest in peace.
Pazzo's podcast. What episode is this? Like 27?
10,000.
10,000. All right.
Close to it.
That's what 20, we're going with.
27.
27. It is 27.
So we got our insurance lowered last week. That's what I remember. Yeah.
We're a little bit mature.
This was the year I met my wife.
Well, really?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not met my wife. Started dating her.
I had a similar experience. I met my wife, and then she hounded me for several years before I started dating her.
Well, that just means you were kind of stupid for the.
I was actually. We won't get into that.
We could get into that.
We could.
But not today.
But we have Carrie from Girls Beer Sports with us today, joining us for today and next week's episode as well, because we record them at the same time because
awesome.
We're cool like that.
Hey, I'm happy to be here and drink beer.
We appreciate you coming here. And what are you drinking right now?
I am currently drinking a Blue Stallion Get Damn Skippy. Through a straw.
Yeah, because of the headsets,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
How does that taste through a straw?
You know what? It's just as good because this beer is just, it's amazing. And I really can't say enough about this beer. I haven't said enough about this beer on Twitter and on our podcast of the fact that if you want a peanut butter porter, go get this beer because it delivers everything it promises and more.
Definitely very good. Love that beer.
Yeah, it's definitely a Reese cup at 6% alcohol.
Yeah.
So the guys at Blue Stallion, they kind of nailed that. I think David, one of the assistant brewers over there, I think he's in charge of that recipe. And, yeah, he's nailed it. So
the smell, I mean, just the smell coming off of it with the peanuts, the roasted peanuts is unbelievable.
It's mouthwatering. You're
it
right.
Is.
Just from the nose.
And I think it's appropriate being in Lexington because, you know, you can smell the Jiffy plant when they roast peanuts.
Right.
You know?
I live pretty close to there, and I've said whenever I sell my house, if the wind is drifting my direction, if there's a strong peanut butter flavor, the price goes up 15%. That's how it works.
I don't blame you.
So here's a call out to them. I think they should do a PB&J beer.
Ooh.
They really should.
Yes.
And I had one of those not too long ago, and you came in to the beer trap looking for that
one. Wanted it.
But you didn't know that that was not something that's available in our neighborhood.
Unfortunately.
That was something someone brought me from a neighborhood across the country.
So. Well, bring me some next time as well.
We'll see what we can do. I'm not sure. That one actually came from like the New Jersey area. So
you could just bring me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich too. That would be fine.
I'm fine with that, along with a peanut butter porter, and we'll just pretend.
Sure.
So, guys, we're going to talk about a few things today. One of those things is Oktoberfest. It's back.
Yeah.
The beers are here. The beers have been here since like July, but it's actually time to drink them now.
Strike up the Umpaw bands and get out and get to iron off those lederhosen, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, Marzen's are one of those seasonal beers that I do not mind. Like, I love a good Oktoberfest, a good Marzen beer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We all seem to have this aversion to things that say Oktoberfest until October actually gets here. But when it turns out, the flavors that go into an Oktoberfest, if you take that term October off of it, it's really an adept beer year-round because it has enough malt characteristic, enough alcohol content, where it does stand up to a lot of wintertime consumption. But then also, it's refreshing and crisp and clean enough. It's lager-like enough to really handle the 4th of July as well. So it can be an all-purpose, all-occasion, everyday-a-calendar kind of beer if you let it be.
Well, and I think you're actually absolutely right about that. I had a Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest just this past Monday on our last episode, and it's exactly what you're describing. It was a lighter lager, and I felt like I could have drank that more in the summer, you know, whereas some of them can get kind of heavy a little bit, but I really liked the Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest. I thought it was a really good, easy drinking beer.
Yeah, they do a great job. Every year they put that beer out, they collaborate with a new brewery. And the new brewery that I'm talking about is actually an old brewery in Germany, somebody that's been used to making those style of beers for a very long time. And so they team up with them so they make sure what they're putting out is highly authentic, highly traditional, and has a very classic beer taste. It's not something what we've gotten used to in America is by American microbreweries, you know, coming out with beers that are influenced by those flavors of Germany or those flavors of Scotland or those flavors of Belgium. And they taste fine, and they do a really nice job with that, but they're not exactly authentic. They're not exactly traditional. Sometimes they lack the dryness or the spiciness or the rusticity, the earthiness that some of those beers have. So Sierra Nevada has decided, okay, whenever it comes time to make another Oktoberfest beer, let's not try to adapt our equipment and the ingredients we're already ordering and try to create create an Oktoberfest-like beer out of that. Let's go to the sources. Let's do something traditional. Let's use the right equipment. Let's use the right techniques. Use the right ingredients and the right proportions and know how to do this thing the way it would have been done 50, 60, 100 years ago or longer. And so they reach out to some of the brewing partners in Germany to make that happen. And they do so with a pretty good... Josh, are you okay over there, buddy?
I got my hands greasy with this bread.
We don't want to know why your hands are greasy.
It slipped out of my hands. It's awful. It's a horrible thing that just happened. But everything's fine. All the equipment's good.
See, I like to think you got excited to hear me talk about October.
That's what it was, actually.
You just couldn't handle it
anymore.
We're
not going to be electrocuted over here.
No. We are not going to be electrocuted.
All right.
Seriously, though.
That almost never happens to you.
Slipped. It never has happened. This is the first time. I feel horrible.
There's some premature action happening over there, and I'm not sure we need to take the listeners any further.
Yeah, we'll be fine after that.
That's why we can't have nice things.
That's why we can't have nice things.
At least you didn't blow up the board.
Not yet. It's coming. There's some right there.
Night is still young, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, this is true. That Sierra Nevada was brewed in collaboration with Brahas Miltenberger this year.
Very seldom seen brewery here in America, if ever. But yeah, those guys, you know, they originate in Munich, and so those guys know how to make those beers the very traditional way. And those ways really started a long time ago, whenever Prince Ludwig married Teresa of Saxony, and they decided to get together and have a big party. And so they hired a very famous brewer of that era. His name was Antoine Dreyer. And had him to form a recipe. They say they like lagers. They say they want something richer, a little stronger. So Antoine Dreyer is afraid of making too little beer and it would not stand the party. Well, Prince Ludwig got word of this and he decided, well, let's make enough of it so that we're not going to run out. But he also encouraged his invitees to kind of stick around and nobody leaves until the beer's finished. So the beer lasted almost 3 weeks. That's the reason why the duration of Oktoberfest today lasts that amount of time in Germany. But whenever it comes to the Oktoberfest beer, it has a little bit more malt character than your traditional lager. They use a little bit of Munich malt or a little bit of Vienna malt. And so the Vienna malt has a little bit more of a nuttier presence, a little bit more of a honey-like presence. It's something that approaches caramel, but it should never be something you describe as caramelly. So if you taste the flavor of actual true caramel in an Oktoberfest, the beer test certification folks, they see that as a flaw. Now, customer-wise, you can see things much differently than the beer judge people do, and you can buy and vote based on your wallet and your personal preferences. And so you got that going for you. But also the hoppiness in that thing should be very, very low. It should have this nice herbal presence in the finish. It should come across somewhat mint-like with a little bit of an evaporative cooling on the palate and on the tongue that really ushers in a crispness and refreshing quality that was really important back in the days when you did not have air conditioning or you did not have refrigeration. So those things were very important
especially
back then.
Especially in September.
Yeah, especially in September, because it can still be toasty then.
Well, I can tell you that's exactly what that Sierra Nevada delivered, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I will say that, going back to your point about the caramel, I have had things that say they're Oktoberfest that are kind of darker and more caramely, and it, you know, just not a huge, couldn't drink, but like maybe two of them or something like that, you know?
And even so, sometimes, you know, they present themselves as Oktoberfest. You know, even though the brewed is lagers, they come across a little bit more of an amber ale will rather than an Oktoberfest. Yeah. So you get that confusion that comes along.
Franz from Rheingeist is a good example of
that. They did a really nice job.
Yes. Really good one. And honestly, call me pedestrian, but Sam Adams Oktoberfest is damn good.
That is their most popular beer.
That's a good beer. It really is.
A lot of people give Sam Adams a hard
time. They do, but
if you make a good beer, you make a good beer.
I totally agree.
And, you know.
Yeah, most people, whenever you get to the point where you listen to podcasts about beer, you've gotten to the point where a passing craft beer is no longer suitable. You're looking for intense craft beer.
I just wish I could get cases of old Fezziwig when it comes out during Christmas time, but you can only get those mixed cases where you
do
get two bottles.
They make you drink stuff you don't want to buy.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Come on. Just give me the whole six pack.
I'll drink it. I swear to God, I'm not going to waste it, right? I promise I'm not wasting it.
None of the other beers in that case are near as good as old Fezziwig.
Here's what we need to do, Jason.
What's going on here?
When that time rolls around and that case becomes pressed, we'll talk about the enjoyment of that beer, but then there's that other stuff in there that you may not want to drink. We need to have you to teach us what to do with these styles in terms of how to cook with them. hey, or do something like that.
I can do that.
There you go.
I can mask anything.
Or you know what? You can do what we do with all our crap beer. So a lot of times we tailgate and people, you know, just dump the beer on you, right, and they leave. Well, what we do, and we did this at our Derby Parade this past year, and we've done it before. You take a big cooler, you put all your crap beer in it or leftovers. You label them on top with like masking tape with a number. You stick them in the cooler so only that number is showing with enough ice. Then you have a hat that you pass around and people draw and corresponds to the beer that they get. You play the game, you pick the beer. Okay, well, I'm sorry if it's a terrible beer. If you want to stay in the game to get another beer, you have to drink the whole thing. You can't take it to the bathroom. You can't dump it out. And that's it.
There
I love
only,
it and I hate it.
There's only like two beers in my life I haven't finished.
And they are?
Well, Rogue, Maple, Donut.
Yeah, it was a revisit of whatever. Four or five episodes
That was
ago.
One of them. Oh, my God. That was
East of Smoke, right?
Yeah. Oh, it was like licking a barbecue pit.
Yeah.
And I
would lick a barbecue pit.
The second one was the Fruitwood. From
yeah.
Founders.
Oh, come on, man. Don't give Fruitwood a hard time. I mean, it's a beautiful cherry character on one side and the beautiful character of Chloraseptic on the other. And they just come together seamlessly.
There was a third, but it wasn't because of flavor. It was because of alcohol intensity. It was the Beast from Avery. Man, like they give you a 12-ounce bottle. There's no way in hell you're going to finish a 12-ounce bottle.
Well, you need to split that one like eight ways.
Yeah, like a 12. Yeah, you need a shot of Beast.
I'll say this, though. That beer, sure, it's so massive whenever it's fresh and so spicy, and the alcohol stands out so much because it's a Belgian beer at its heart, and so it has a tendency to want to be a little drier. Well, when you get a big boozy beer like that that's dry to start with, or somewhat dryish to start with, it's a recipe for disaster. But that thing ages beautifully. How long do you have to wait? I had one 10 years old. Fantastic. So
they should only
bury it in the ground
loadings.
For 10 years and
it's like
go dig
it's like
it up.
Bourbon then a little bit.
Absolutely, because you know the thing about it is all these things that we're tasting are fermented beverages,
right?
And they're not all ready to drink at the same time. The type of yeast and how it metabolizes sugars and all flavors that it produces. And some of those are alcohols. Some of those are highly fusel alcohols. But there's a lot of flavors that just haven't come together yet. And brewers are notorious for put those onto the market way too soon. They're not in a precondition. When you put out an IPA or a Hefeweizen or a lager, it's easy to know when those preconditions are because they happen relatively early after they've been fermented. But some of these other beers like barley wines, imperial stouts, Belgian quads, old ales, these things are just unruly whenever they're when at the end of fermentation. But brewers don't have the warehousing space to be able to keep it for very long, so they ask retailers to keep it by keeping it on their shelves. Well, if you drink those things fresh, and most brewers admit you know, you need to be drinking beers fresh, but these beers are the exception. You drink them fresh, they're going to kick you in the teeth. They're just too strong. So their maturation period has just started when other beers are getting toward a sweet spot. So those things don't need a couple of weeks or a couple of months to mature out. These things need a couple of years, maybe even more. We have a cellar program at the Beer Trap where we keep things, and most beer styles, even the heavier things that go, 8, 10, 12% alcohol, has a finite aging potential of about 5 years. But we do have about 5% of our portfolio that stays in the cellar that extends well beyond that. 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. So some of these flavors takes a very long time for them to reach mature status. Crazy. And I think the Beast is one of those, obviously.
I think some of those beers, they maybe should offer in smaller quantities, though. Do ponies of them. Or
they really should.
Whatever, because, I mean, some of those beers are just so intense. Like, either offer it in the bomber, where it is implied that you need to split this.
Sure.
Or offer it in the pony, so it's like, yeah, I could maybe drink that amount.
I like something that Rogue did, you know, 6, 8, and 10 years ago, where they started putting their Imperial beers into bottles that were 8-ounce bottles. The problem is they were so small they got overlooked on the shelves, so people didn't really pay them attention. They really didn't take them serious as a legitimate product with a legitimate flavor within. So people passed on them routinely, so they went away from that and started putting them in other packaging formats that catch the eye a little bit more readily.
Well, do you think, like, you know, the craft beer market is – way higher, you know, more saturated than it was even 5 years ago. Do you think that they could do like the bourbon market does, where, you know, the bourbon market, actually September is bourbon release month, and this is when all the you know, your Pappies, your, you know, all the stuff that people really, really kind of covet and want come out. Do you think the beer market could go with that, with some of those higher end, higher products, higher alcohols?
I think
alcohols?
They could, and I think we're starting to see that a little bit. A lot of breweries, they do have a release day. It's just they don't release them always at the brewery. Sometimes they put them out to market. So, you know, like the liquor barns will get the Pappies. Well, guess what? Liquor barn gets a lot of beer, too. And some of those beers have a cachet about them that puts people in lines. Can't wait to get at the stuff. Like Black Friday, whenever you have the Bourbon County Stout releases that happen. That's always kind of a big day.
That first keg we always get at breakfast stout is really...
Yeah, the KBS by Founders.
Yes.
That's another big day. But you also get the other more specialized releases, like Dark Lord Day with Three Floyds, where people line up at the door, but you have to buy a ticket on Ticketmaster. Those tickets sell quickly, so you have to be there to refresh that button very quickly. Then you get these tickets, and you go and stand in this line. Then all of a sudden, you draw a number. Then you get in this other line, and you're eligible to purchase up to like six of these bottles at $15 a piece. And you buy all six of them. Now you're eligible to buy this other bottle if you're drawn from a pool. Most people kind of are. So now you get the opportunity to buy this ultra special thing for $90 a bottle.
But
so you get
what?
That thing that happens too. And it seems like every brewery has a release like that that happens with their specific brands at a different time of year. So there's not really a season whenever you get a conglomeration of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes they happen every week, every month, every season of the year.
But, you know, I've heard a lot of things about that day. Almost none of them are positive.
About Dark Lord Day?
Yes.
I think the Dark Lord Day, if you got to go there and you got to, you know, be prepared, number one, to get wet. It always.
Well, the only thing I've heard positive about the whole day is the beer.
Well, that's it.
Because nobody likes going there, because I've heard over and over and over and over and over again that everybody that works there are a-holes. And then, you know, I've heard that it's like they have no appreciation of the customer. Like, they just sort of like...
Throw the bottle at you and get out.
Yeah, basically.
I think they have an appreciation, but if you're forced to live in Munster, Indiana, you would act like an asshole too, trust me.
No,
that's just how culture goes there.
My wife is from Pike County, and they're not assholes.
No, they're not.
When people ask me, say, hey, I'm going to go visit Three Floyds. Do you have any advice? I'm like, yeah, duck. I mean, that's the kind of environment you live in whenever you're there.
There's some beauty, though, in Pike County. You know, like, in Indiana, it's just flat and just awful.
I've been up there. I mean, yeah, but you're an hour away from Chicago. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's not terrible.
That is good, and you're probably an hour away from Indianapolis as well, so... That's fine, but still, I guarantee you, we'd all be assholes if we lived there. I'm an asshole, and I live in Lexington.
You're 3 hours away from Pikeville, and their nearest city is, like, Huntington.
Right.
Or Williamson.
And Huntington is, like, proven to be the most depressing place on the planet. But.
And the highest rate of obesity.
Right?
And, like, so, come on.
They have Randy Moss, though.
Pikeville has got to be worse than Munster, Indiana.
I don't know.
Yeah, I grew up actually here.
Now, this is for anybody listening from Pike County.
We love you.
People that I love there. I have people that I love there. It is beautiful, but I'm just saying.
I've got to cross that off the list as well. Family members on my wife's side, we love you, okay? It's been.
Are you kidding? They don't have computers. They're not going to listen to a podcast.
I'm not even going to touch that one. Episode 27, Fazo's Podcast.
They barely have Dr. Seuss.
Please don't, like, drive up here, Pikeville people, because I guarantee you they're going to have their, like, trucks with diesels.
Cars wouldn't make it anyway.
I don't know.
We're done. We're cutting this off. Guys.
Before you offend the other three listeners that tune in every week.
It's been fantastic staying here with you guys. And, of course, Carrie from Girls Beer Sports. It's been awesome. Great podcast. And we look forward to more, because coming right up in a week for you guys, we'll have another. If you want to check us out on Twitter, it's at Pazos Podcast, at Pazos Podcast, WLXG. Also, I want to just mention how disappointed I am in myself for slipping up on that beer. I still had plenty of that beer left, and I was really enjoying it. It was an oatmeal stout from Ethereal. I think I'm going to have to just double up and get another one, because I was eating this cheese bread, and it got my hands kind of kind of buttery.
Whatever you do on your own time. Hey, we're not judging.
I looked at all of you, and you were judging.
Next week, we're live from Chili Willy's in Phelps, Kentucky.
Oh, I thought we were going to Platinum Dolls.
Pazzo's Podcast. Screw you guys. Thank you for listening.
Can I tell you a secret?
What's that?